I'm Dustin Harder, and this is Keep On Cooking. Hello, and welcome to Keep On Cooking, the world's only podcast dedicated to plant-based cookbooks and the authors who wrote them. I'm your host, Dustin Harder, and if he were a drag queen, an online generator told me his name would be Divine Intervention, or Devine. They spelled it D-E-V-I-N. Devine?
Divine Intervention.
It's my husband and producer of the pod, David Rossetti. Does that name check out for you?
I think so.
Yeah, I think that works for you.
I feel like it would have like a kind of like an angelic. But how about you?
Well, strangely enough, mine was Devine Monroe. Oh, so
great.
So, according to whatever Devine questions Monroe, it had a lot of questions. This drag generator. I was like, this is too many questions. I was like, it was at like 10. And I was like halfway through yours, and I was like, it's too late to go back now.
Devine, please call me Devine.
I needed you to intervene in that questionnaire is what I needed. Well,
Divinely.
We have a little twist for y'all. Y'all want a twist?
Y'all want a twist?
We got a little twist for you on this week's podcast.
Yeah. We are usually always talking books.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you have had some great authors on, but we thought it might be cool to get some answers about publishing a book from someone who does it all the time.
Yeah, that's right. And we have one of the best literary agents in the biz to talk to me today. It's her name is Sally Eckes. I love her, love her, love her. A little literary agent story for me. So it's very important. I think when authors are first looking when they're trying to publish a book, or when they write a book proposal, or they're thinking, do I need an agent? Do I not need an agent? You want to have an agent who believes in you and is invested in you. And I know that seems probably like, I don't know, trite or like just like obvious, but like my agent for my first couple books seemed very invested in me, and like they had a stake in sort of what I was bringing to the table. And then on the third one, I was just like, we were trying to like sell the book, this and that. And I just felt, I remember they said to me at one point, they were like, I just wish you had more followers. And I was like, you know, I'm not feeling very supported right now. Yeah. So I made that choice there that I was like, I'm going to go my own road. And thank you so much for your time. And we are officially breaking up. And we did, and it was friendly and fine. And I said my case. But my point of that is sort of like, I was in a spot when I first looked for an agent where I was like, and I don't know, you probably feel this as an actor, I would imagine, like, yeah. When you're first starting out, you're like, I need to take any representation I can get. Like, right. Any representation, whoever. Is yeah. Some representation.
You believe in me, great.
And so I think it served its purpose. But then I was at a point where I was like, well, any representation is not great if that representation is not like going for it for me.
Sure.
So I had to make that choice. And in doing that, I started researching other agents and seeing who I knew, who knew people who might introduce me to someone. And I talked to a few people, but then I had a meeting with the Sally Eckes, and I love this woman. I love her. I love her. And now I've come to, it used to be, you know, I would meet with her to talk about a potential project or something. Now I meet with her, I'm just looking forward to the phone conversation we're going to have, because I always kind of walk away feeling like I learned a little bit about myself. That's one of my favorite things about her. We get into it in the interview. But Sally Eckes is the lead agent and co-owner at the Eckes Group, a full-service culinary agency specializing in literary and talent representation. She represents a wide range of culinary health, wellness, and lifestyle talent, from first-time cookbook authors to seasoned chefs, RDs, professional food writers and bloggers, and internet and YouTube personalities. From concept to contract, she has brokered over 300 book deals with top publishers, nice, including Penguin Random House, HarperCollins, Hachette, Simon & Schuster, and numerous indie publishers.
I love that. Sally also speaks all over the country about publishing trends and agenting, and facilitates workshops that combine the agency's groundbreaking media training program with applied improv training to help authors hone their authentic message and gain confidence and comfort promoting their work. To honor the Eckes Group's 40th anniversary, she launched a self-paced online course called How to Write a Cookbook.
We're going to touch on that in just a second. But David, this word right here, how do you say that?
It could be hatchet.
So I always thought it was hatchet. This is like the people that send all the books and everything. And then someone said to me, no, it's Hachette. I should have asked Sally. Sally would know the answer to this. I'm gonna ask her next time I talk to her.
It's two T's, which is strange.
So I thought it was Hatchet.
Yeah.
But then someone said no, and so it was someone who worked for it.
It sounds better.
I was just talking to them like a month ago, someone I had just met. I said, "What do you do?" They said, "Oh, I work for Hachet." And I was like, the book people? And they were like, "Yeah, Hachet." And I was like, "Okay, then I must be wrong if you work for them." I'm going to ask Sally. I feel like she would know. Anyways, she does have this online course called How to Write a Cookbook. And as a listener today of the Keep on Cooking Pod, you can get $150 off the course using the code PRO150 at checkout. So the link for How to Write a Cookbook course is in the podcast description. And listen, if you're considering writing a cookbook, this course is for you. It's got everything you want to know, from proposal to pitch, everything. And we get all into it on the podcast, so don't you fret. We're going to tell you more about that. But if you go to ekisgroup.com, you will see a button for cookbook course at the top. So either the link in this description or go to Ekis Group and then use the code PRO150 for $150 off the How to Write a Cookbook course.
She also has a pitch and publishing intensive happening March 21st with limited space available. And the link for that is also in the show description. It is discounted on the site right now and spots are going fast. So be sure you go sign up pronto if that is of interest. Now, this one is a 4-hour interactive group workshop that covers everything you need to know about how to get published in the cookbook nonfiction arena. And it also is currently discounted on the website. So click the link in the show description, snag a spot before it sells out. Again, that intensive is March 21st, 2023.
Yes. And Sally loves cooking and conceptualizing new spicy dishes. She's a spicy gal. She likes it spicy. And she is dedicated supporter and board member of the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society and Happier Valley Comedy. She also belongs to the Women's President's Organization Hartford Chapter, International Association of Culinary Professionals and Chefs Collaborative, among other organizations. Please welcome to the podcast, the literary powerhouse, Sally X. She's my favorite sassy superhero that helps aspiring authors get their voices heard. The lead literary agent of the Ekis Group. Please welcome to the podcast, the brilliant Sally Ekis. Thank you for being here, Sally.
Thank you so much. I feel like with that intro, I should have flown into the screen.
a little cape action, perhaps?
Yes, perhaps. I love a good cape action.
Well, let's get into your icebreaker right away. On the spectrum of 1 to 10 from introvert to extrovert, where do you think you stand?
Well, I present classic like 9-10, because if we're out somewhere, I'm going to be like, "Hey, this is who I am. Who are you? How are you doing? Let's connect." But when it comes to like needing to recharge, which I guess is how you define the introvert extrovert difference, I do like some solo time. So I'll go like 7.
Nice. Nice. Yeah. I feel like I'm like a 3. Like and then when I'm out, I know. And then when I'm out, I'm like a 12. It's like the extremes for me. Like
I would never have 3'd you. Never.
It is. Yeah. It is frightening. When I leave an event and I'm with my husband, he looks at me, he's like, "Are you okay?" And I'm like, "I just need like a day."
Wow. Cool. Good. See, you never know what's going on for people.
Well, but what's your usual recharge like after event? Do you just need to like TV time, read time, cook time? Like, is there anything specific?
You didn't get clearance for that question. I mean, at this point now, it's like time with my kiddo. So it's just playing, which is a really helpful way to recharge.
That's great. Yeah. Well, dear listeners, we have such a treat today on the Keep on Cooking podcast. Sally Ekis is a literary agent and also co-owner of the Ekis Group. Can you tell us a bit about the Ekis Group? It's been, I mean, in business 40 years, 40 plus years, right? Is it 41, 42? I know with the pandemic, 40 was in the middle of that, right?
Yes. Yeah. So okay. April will be 41 years and the company was started by my mom, Lisa Ekis, and it started as a PR firm. So back in the days when cookbook authors were sent out on tour from their publishers, Lisa and the agency, then called Lisa Ekis Public Relations, would be booking those multi-city tours. And she really created the category of culinary publicity. And I grew up around it, never having any sort of pressure to work in the business. It was a very happy accident that I moved home and started working in the company and realized I'd been informally training for this pretty much for my whole life. And over the years, the company has had different types of areas of focus. And we've really settled into being a literary agency and a talent agency all within the culinary space.
And what is your current role with the Ekis Group then? I mean, I kind of said it, but I guess I'm curious, like you started in there, where did you start there and get to where you are now within the group?
So my origin story is somewhat unique in that I started what I thought would be temporarily. I needed a job a few years post-college. Lisa needed some help at the agency. So I was, at the time, it was still hard copy proposals. So I was like packaging proposals to go out to editors with the pitch letter, sending them out. And I had a very unique opportunity for hyper mentoring during the time when we were pitching two different projects that got interest from publishers. And Lisa was on a 1 month medical leave when she had a knee surgery. She had knee replacement and she needed someone to help her sort of negotiate these deals. And once I got a taste of that side of the sort of part of the process of publishing a book, I was totally hooked. A few years in, we started talking about if this would be a long-term succession plan. And now leading into April 2023, I will be with the agency for 14 years and Lisa's formally retiring after 41 years.
That's amazing. Wow. What a journey this entire company's been on.
Yes.
That's and amazing to hear to it start. And what's that? More to more come? Yeah. It's to think that it started out as a PR company, especially then. I mean, book tours used to be the thing, right? Like people really went on the road and sold their book doing like radio and talk shows and all that stuff. And it's changed considerably, I feel like.
Yes. And one of the unique points of history in the agency and in the industry is that as Lisa was booking these tours, we realized we weren't necessarily sending people on tour who knew exactly what their message was and how to convey it effectively with the media in, you know, a three minute segment while cooking and talking on television, mostly at the time, although radio, of course, too. So she co-founded the first culinary media training program. And that is still a service that people can either come to the agency for training or we can travel to them. And it's an opportunity to really hone exactly what your message is. And so really bringing to light like somebody's overall branded message conveyed mm-hmm. through a book or conveyed through the media has always been a part of the legacy of our agency.
That's so important too. A lot of authors, as you know, I mean, I'm sure you work with different variations of people who want to be in front of the camera or want to be on podcasts and others that don't want to talk. So it really is a skill to sort of learn the media training to help propel your book along to success, essentially.
Yeah. A little embarrassing window into my childhood is that all of my home videos are like me in front of the media training camera, or like me sitting on the media training table, like pretending like I had my own cooking show, or like, you know, conveying some sort of 6-year-old message point very succinctly.
Yeah. Just looking like the smartest child in the room, basically.
In some nerdy food-focused room, sure.
Well, you have, from concept to contract, you've brokered over 300 book deals. I feel in the last decade, the want for vegan cookbooks has sort of taken off, and vegan cookbooks seemed to me like in my eye, when I first discovered Ekkes Group, I can see vegan books all over the website and everything. Mm-hmm. Was it intentionally part of the Ekkes landscape, or did it sort of organically work its way in there?
A little bit of both. So we have been longtime agents of record for Nava Atlas, who was first in the vegetarian and now vegan scene, and Fran Costigan, and a couple other like sort of, I would say, you know, original vegan authors and content creators and writers. And out of working with them, I developed a real taste and interest in this space. And then, you know, they might introduce me to someone, and that sort of grew our client list in that capacity. And then I started doing some active scouting in the vegan space, and it became an intentional area of focus, but I don't think that's necessarily how it began. I will say though, that it has profoundly changed how I cook and think about food. And I have really, I feel a lot of pride around the representation that we have in the vegan category, because it's important and fun and really bountiful.
Well, and I want everyone, she said Nava Atlas and Fran Costigan, both friends of the pod and two women I love dearly. They're powerhouses.
Oh,
they're so great. And there's episodes that everyone can go listen to of Keep On Cooking that they've been on talking about their books. We've had Nava on twice. I love her so much.
She's great.
And so fun to talk to.
Did she rank herself in the introvert extrovert?
We didn't have that question for her. I can't recall, but I would, if I have her on again, I'm going to ask her that question. Yeah. She'll call, and me and her and David we'll just talk on the phone for 15 minutes before we start the podcast. She's just so like friendly and lovely. I love it. Yeah. Before we did the video part, we used to not record the video. She'd call and get on video and be like, I just wanted to see you face to face before we started. I'm like, that's great. I love it. I usually ask authors what their first vegan cookbook was. So I'll ask you, is there a vegan cookbook in your home that you found you have used often or that has sort of changed cooking for you?
Yeah. I mean, I would say that each of the vegan titles we've represented have really changed how I cook in the kitchen, but there are a couple that come to mind immediately. One is right there, the Wicked Healthy Kitchen Cookbook that Chad and Derek Sarno from Wicked Healthy Foods wrote with Dave Joachim. And that book has so much technique in it. And I mean, David Sarno has been a huge advocate of like mushroom pressing and just the love of mushrooms and what you can do with a mushroom is pretty profound. And he really stretches like the limits to that. And that transformed how I cook. I mean, the mushing pressing technique alone really made an impact. I worked on a book called Food is the Solution from a publisher that came out maybe like 3 or 4 years ago now. And that book gave me a much clearer perspective on the environmental impact. So I think about food a lot differently in my kitchen now. Haley Thomas did a book called Living Lively that is a vegan book, though not necessarily like build so much. It's really a inspirational call to action for her peers. And so like everyone's kind of given me a taste, but I would point back to like Wicked Healthy to be something that I've been using in my kitchen the most.
I love that. Wicked Healthy is so great. Again, they're on the pod, you guys. If you want to hear more about Wicked Healthy, you can go back and listen to Chad Sarno come talk about his Wicked Healthy cookbook. And Derek Sarno's Instagram is like awesome to follow because all of that mushroom stuff is on there. He is pressing them on there all the time. It's so cool. It really is. Well, you have a very valuable online course, and I want to be sure we tell everyone about it. It's packed with knowledge, and this is such an interesting perspective to have you here today. Listeners, we talk to cookbook authors all the time, so we thought, who better to have on to sort of talk about the other side of it? I've been so grateful for the conversations I've had with you over the last couple of years. Each time we talk, I kind of feel like I walk away with like a little more sense of self for myself in the culinary space, which is so helpful. Because when you're trying to sell a cookbook and you're just thinking of different things, it's easy to get people start to pick it apart. Different publishers pick it apart. You start to lose sense of like what your true vision was and stuff like that. So really, truly, conversations with you have been so helpful. And you have a course appropriately titled How to Write a Cookbook. So it's a no-brainer for anyone even considering writing a cookbook. But can you give us an overall summary of what the course has to offer?
Sure. Thank you also for your comments. I feel the same way about our conversations. The course is an answer to the questions that we get over and over again in the industry. What does an agent do? Should I publish a cookbook? What about self-publishing or traditional publishing? How much money can I make? Do I need a cookbook? How do I find an agent? What's the difference between publicity and marketing? I mean, we got these questions over and over again, and you know, everyone needs a good pandemic project. So I spent a year putting it all into a class that's hosted on a platform where you can take it at your own pace. And I mean, to be honest, I think there's so much valuable content out there for people who are aspiring or want to continue to publish in the culinary space. And my perspective as an agent is as sort of the central hub working with a bunch of different authors and a bunch of different editors and a bunch of different publishers. And so I'm offering sort of like this nexus of information where other people are sort of sharing their one lived experience, maybe with multiple publishers, okay, or multiple editors. But I have this perspective that is sort of across the entire industry. So I've distilled it down into the course. And if you don't do the homework and you just fly through the content, you can be done in like 2 hours.
But the homework is valuable, I would imagine.
Definitely recommend doing homework. Yes. I created it for a reason, but you know, not everyone loves homework. So.
Right. That is true. That is true. Yeah. So this came about in the middle of the pandemic. This was a
technically thing. It was before the pandemic.
But what a great time to work on it.
We were running in-person workshops and we were about to welcome our first cohort of people here to the agency.
Wow.
The pandemic hit and we moved the workshop virtual. And then I thought, might as well just move the workshop content into a course. And then being the type A organized perfectionist that I am, though I would say the course is almost perfect. There's always things you would want to change and edit. I spent a year putting the content that was in a virtual workshop into the course.
That's fantastic, because a lot of people don't put that time into it and they just slap something up, and that you just know, makes all the difference.
I really love sharing this information and knowledge. That's why I love having conversations like this. And then the course is for people who are ready to take it to the next level. They're ready to invest in the time and energy to say, okay, what first steps do I have? It's either working on the competition section or working on the proposal or drafting an overview or working on that pitch for a friend. Like, there's many different points of entry to do this work. And if you're ready to say, okay, let me try on really taking this seriously to put my ideas on paper for a book, because writing a book is a ton of work. Yeah. The course is a great place to start.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I love that. And there's everyone listening. We really just buckle up, because we're about to dive in. She's going to give you some nuggets of wisdom here. So let's just dive right into some questions for you about this. Everybody can get it all in the course, but let's start at the beginning. What are some reasons that someone should publish a cookbook?
Yeah. So I ask people in every conversation I have, why do you want to write a book? And oftentimes it stops people in their tracks because they haven't really thought about why. Somebody told them they should. Maybe it's their readers. Maybe they have a lot of readers. Maybe a publisher approached them and said, you should write a book. Maybe a publisher approached them and said, you should write a book and here's a contract. Okay, that's cool. That can be very attractive. But is that the right idea for you? And why do you want to write a book? I think a book is a big, beautiful business card. It is very rarely a retirement plan, even when you have the best deals. It can be a wonderful brand extension. It can be a wonderful way to open up new doors to then introduce your work to new readers. Maybe you make most of your revenue from creating content and videos. A book can be a calling card to bring new people to that content, so you have new eyes and more eyes on content that's producing revenue in other places. It positions you as an expert, so you might open the door for speaking engagements. You can pitch yourself to local media if you need to get some camera time to produce the sizzle reel, to produce the blah, blah, blah. So it's really this like mechanism. It also is most often successful when you have a really unique perspective or mission or like something to share. And oftentimes that voice can be shared in other forms of, in other mediums besides a book. And a book is such a big investment in time and effort and production quality from your time and the publisher's time and the printing and the design and the shipping and all of that. Mm-hmm. So there really needs to be like a wider purpose for the book, and reasons to write a book or what a book can do for somebody is a mechanism for other parts of their brand and message.
I imagine you probably get a lot of people that are like, well, I just want to write a book. Sometimes
most people say that.
Yeah. It's a lot of work, everybody. It's a lot of work.
I once was at a conference listening to someone on a panel saying, everyone tells me I should write a book and I don't want to. And I went up to that person after the conference and said, if you ever change your mind, I would love to talk with you. And sure enough, like 3 years later, she called me and now she has multiple books.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because if you don't want to write a book, but you have something cool and unique to say, when you decide that you do, I'm interested.
Yeah. I get that for sure. And some of the books I've read too that I love, like some of my favorite cookbooks. I can't say it for all of them, but I'm thinking of one author in particular right now. She has this fantastic book that I love. And I said, so are there going to be more? And she was like, no. She was like, that's it. She was like, and I love what I did and I wanted to do it, but like that was it. So some people really have their eyes on like that one book baby, essentially, that they really want to write.
And a great barometer for if you are ready to write a book is the proposal. Like, just start with the proposal, because if you have a looming cursor on that document that you never get to, maybe it's not time to write a book.
Oh, that's a
good... If it's the thing that like you wake up and you're most excited to start working on, maybe you should write a book, right? There's like different ways to check in with yourself along the way. The proposal is like a good logistical start, because it's also what you need to eventually sell your book.
Well, and just a good indicator, like if you sit down to write a proposal and you're moving and shaking and you're like, oh my gosh, I can't get this out fast enough, then like there is a book in those fingertips for sure.
Totally. Yep.
I love that. Well, what are the pros and cons? This is a big one. I think people are going to be very interested in here. What are the pros and cons to traditional publishing versus self-publishing?
Yeah.
That was my terrible drum roll, by the way. You're welcome.
It was a great drum roll. It depends what your goal is. Identify what your goal is with the book and then see which path helps you achieve that goal most successfully. Generally speaking, there are what I consider like three main differentiators if somebody should traditionally publish or self-publish. The first is financial. Ultimately, in traditional publishing, you're offered in advance, and in self-publishing, you're funding the project on your own in some capacity. The second is control, in the best sense of the word. If in traditional publishing, you want to like advise and sort of have your strong opinion heard throughout the process, cool. In self-publishing, you're driving all those decisions and you know exactly what you want your book to look and feel like, and you got to figure out how to make that happen. And the third is distribution. If you want to be your own bookseller or you want somebody else to take that on for you, there's a lot more along the way, but generally speaking, those are the three sort of parameters in which to reflect and see which path is right for you. There are very successful traditionally published authors that have then decided they want to self-publish and vice versa.
Yeah, that was sort of an extension I have on this question, if that's okay, because I get asked this one a lot and I don't really know the answer, truthfully. But a lot of people will say to me who are thinking about doing a book, they're like, well, what if I self-publish and then I want to try and get a book deal down the line? Is that going to work against me?
Not if the self-published book has sold really well.
That's what I was thinking, right?
Yeah, it's a great way to show proof of concept, proof of marketability, proof that you know how to reach your audience successfully. And everyone listening is like, well, what does really well mean?
Right.
Like over 5,000 copies in the first year. Okay. Probably more. Like if you sold 10, that's even more attractive. If you sold more than 10, you probably want to do it on your own because you've got your finger on the pulse of something a publisher is going to slow down for.
That's for sure. There's when you're talking about the control of it, it's very interesting because I think I've been very lucky for the most part. I feel like publishers have been good in my conversations with them in collaboration. Yeah. And I actually look forward to the part where I get to hand the manuscript over and start. It took me a while, but like once I got used to it and understood how the collaboration worked, I got really into it because I felt like, oh, great. I don't have to think about all of these things. Right.
Yes.
But I do think there is a world where like, if you're so specific, I've spoken to authors before who are like, it just didn't work out the way I wanted to. Like I wish XYZ was different and I had all these plans. So I know that the struggle can be there sometimes.
Totally. I use a bus analogy. Like in traditional publishing, you are next to the driver of the bus, maybe like tapping on their shoulder, telling them where to go, even like kind of vetting the people getting on the bus. Yeah. But you are not driving this massive bus of like how to make a book. In self-publishing, you are driving the bus. You're figuring out like who to pick up, how to get them to stay in their seats, and just navigating all of it. And it totally depends on the person. My answer to every question in publishing is it depends. Mm-hmm. Like, what is your goal? How do you want to get there? Are you open to feedback? It's okay if you're not. It's great if you are. It totally depends on like, what is the ultimate thing you want to achieve? And then how are we going to get there? Compromising along the way, whether you self-publish or traditionally publish, I think is an important part of the process because you're ultimately like collaborating to get a product to the market. And everything has its nuances and its stories to it.
Yeah. Yeah. So true. All great fine points, obviously. Not surprised. Hello. Well, what does this is a perfect question exactly lining up here? What does an agent do and how do you find one?
I'll start with the second question first, which is that many agents are thanked in the acknowledgement section of books. So you could start with books that you love or you don't.
Sure.
If you are like, and actually in the vegan space is a great example. It's highly unlikely if you're pitching me a vegan cookbook that you don't at least peripherally come in contact with one of my, you know, 10 to 12 vegan clients. So personal introduction, right? Like who's your agent? Are they signing new clients? What are their submission guidelines? Would you be willing to make an intro? I have, clients that contact me all the time saying so-and-so is asking if I can make an introduction. Would that be okay? So acknowledgement sections, you can also look at Publishers Marketplace. You can buy like a one-day subscription to that industry resource and look for the deals that people have done categorically or who they've sold to, who they represent. And oftentimes there's contact information. Kristen Donnelly, who's one of the co-hosts of the Everything Cookbooks podcast, which is another great resource, has a course called Operation Find an Agent, I think. Okay. And so she walks people through like how to find cookbook agents and then provides you with a list of cookbook agents. So that's an option.
Yeah.
And then what does an agent do is a somewhat broader question. Essentially, what an agent's job is to work on the author's behalf to secure them the best publishing opportunity and know the industry norms and contacts and what people are looking for. I work for authors. So my clients are my authors and I'm helping them evaluate, is their idea saleable? I'm helping them fine tune the proposal. I'm coming up with a list of publishers that I think would be interested. I'm drafting a pitch. I'm sending it out, negotiating the contract. So an agent's job is to be the author's advocate and secure, in my opinion, the best deal, which is twofold, editorial fit and financial fit. There's many other components too, but ultimately I'm looking for both of those elements. Agents, it's a commission-based relationship, and agents, any literary agent that is part of the, well, I should say most agents are part of the AALA, the American Association of Literary Agents. So they're abiding by a specific code of ethics. It's a 15% commission-based relationship off of the advance and any royalties, money earned for the life of a project.
Well, and I want to say to everyone listening as well that there's people sort of this idea of looking in the back of a book and finding it. This was my hustle. Like it's how I found my first agent. And
yeah,
but there are also things that aligned with finding my first agent where I just want to tell everyone to not look at something and talk yourself out of it, right? If you're looking in the back of an author's book and it's this author who sold a gazillion copies and you're like, well, there's no way this agent's going to talk to me. Google the agent, send a letter. You don't know what's going to happen. Like you just never know. Like I have lived my life for the last like 8 years of like saying it doesn't hurt to ask. And I would say more times than not, it has served me well. And I think when we're talking about this agent arena, like people need to trust that they're worth and like go for it, you know, because you never know.
Absolutely. You should be an agent because our job is to ask, right? You don't know until you ask for it.
That's exactly
right. I would say there's also like the science and the art to it. So the science is like looking in the back of the book and looking at their submission guidelines and putting together the pitch and querying them the way they, you know, want to be queried. But then there's also the art of it, which is, you know, maybe running into each other at a conference or engaging with me in my Facebook group that I moderate or connecting through current clients and just sort of like supporting the industry at large, which I take note of and I know many other agents do as well.
Yeah.
And I should also mention that it's about finding the right agent, not just any agent. So some agents are high on the communication. Some are not. Some do a lot of proposal development. Some do not, you know, really taking the time to, it can be intimidating, but like ask questions and get a feel for the agent's style. And if you think you would work successfully together.
I had one say to me, I don't think we're a good fit, but I have a colleague who I think is a great fit for you. And that meant everything to me because I was like, well, now I trust you. And I also trust the person that you're introducing me to, because that was just, that felt like good business to me. Instead of just being like, no, there's no way, you know, good luck to you. Goodbye. It was like, here's a potential thing, you know, and nothing could have come of it, but something did. Well, what can someone, money, what can someone expect to be paid for their book advance?
Wow, I never get that question. I get that question every single time I talk with prospective authors. And I guess I lobbed this up earlier when I said it depends, right? I mean, everything depends. I will say that I have negotiated $5,000 deals, $95,000 deals, $125,000 deals, and everything on each side of that. And the only thing that I can say without fail is that the better the proposal, the better the book deal. So spend time doing it right, not rushed.
That's very good advice. I'm taking it to heart.
I will say, though, that, you know, we're always looking for a really attractive publishing deal, and you hear a lot about six-figure deals, and it's really a matter of identifying what somebody's goals are. I once had a client who took a lower advance because it meant that their book would have full color photography in it. And, you know, that, like, what cookbook, this was also probably like five, six, 7 years ago now.
Sure.
all cookbooks needed some version of color in them. And they still do for the most part, although I could be a little bit more flexible if we can get cool with design.
Yeah.
So it depends on what your goal is. And maybe you connect with an editor who just like, you just completely hit it off and it's a comparable offer to something else you have, right? So it really depends on so many factors, and having a great working relationship with your agent, I think, helps secure the best publishing opportunity for you.
And when we're looking at the proposal and thinking about it, how does someone know? I mean, it depends, really, is the answer to this. But how does someone know if they have a winning book concept? Is it a gut feeling, or is it, you know, the reaction of the agent or the reaction of their colleagues if they ask them to look it over? How does someone know they have a winning book concept?
I don't know, but if I could answer that question, I would run all of the proposals through that process. You don't know. Two comments. One is that I will never forget. I once heard an agent say, if they sold 100% of the projects that they took on, they wouldn't be taking enough risks. And I really love that perspective because we don't place everything.
Mm-hmm.
However, most things have been done to some extent. Let's just get, you know,
there's a lot. That's very real. That's very real.
What I'm interested in is your unique perspective. What is your point of differentiation? If you can't identify it, I definitely can't identify it or sell it. So spending time on the proposal helps clarify that. Specifically, I like to point people towards the competition section to start that process of reflection. What is on the market? How has it done? What I'm looking for is an understanding of other books that are similar in this category or vein or topic that have done well and performed well. And you have something sort of new and unique and different to say about an established success of some kind. Very rarely am I pitched an idea I've like never heard, but
sure.
If that's the case, I think, okay, why has this never been published? Or, oh my God, yeah, I'm so interested. So there's no way to know, but the competition section is a great way to sort of workshop if your idea is sort of a good idea or saleable.
Yeah, you know, I didn't know we were doing a motivational TED Talk tonight, but I want to back up something you just said.
You're welcome.
I mean, because it is really true. There is a lot. It's all been done. Let's just be like people all made something up, you know, in the beginning, and now we're making up different variations. We're all making something up, right? Mostly done. Okay, right. People still have brand new brilliant ideas sometimes, but like we have variations of stuff now. But another author once said to me when I was started working on my first book, I said, "Well, this has kind of been done." This, and she goes, "Well, it hasn't been done by you."
Exactly.
And I was like, and I remind myself that all the time, because everyone's, you know, frying tofu and baking tofu these days, but they're not you frying or baking it or offering up your perspective or your recipe on it. So everybody just like cling true to like that thing that is authentically you when it comes to this, even if it is the base of it is like something that's been done, it hasn't done by you. So I just really love
that. I mean, it's your voice, it's your perspective, and nobody else has that. And you can work to, you know, cultivate it or draw it out more than other times, but it's you.
Yes. Yes. And speaking of everyone using their voice and going for it, if someone wants to write a book, what is your advice? What is the first step they should take to write a book?
Ask yourself, why do you want to write a book? And then work on the competition section of the proposal. I mean, there's so many other elements that you can do, but get a sense of what's the market out there in this category. And has it been done? Do you have enough unique new stuff to say?
Like, what do you have to say that lines up with the competition, right?
Yeah,
that makes sense. And the big question, I mean, this might be even bigger than the advanced question, but this day and age in 2023, does platform matter? The sigh.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And platform is not just social media, if that's what we're referring to. Having a large following helps get people's attention faster. And once you have their attention, what do you do with it? And how do you show, you know, how to sort of walk people through that user experience? I look at platform as somebody who knows how to identify what it is they have to share or say or sell, and then successfully accomplish that goal. So if you don't have, let's say, large social media following, but you have X amount of revenue marketing and selling an affiliate code to a spatula or a course or your consulting services, what you're showing me is that you know how to package your content in a marketable way and reach your intended audience. That can offset a lower social media following. That being said, I think generally speaking in today's climate, when we refer to platform, we're first and foremost thinking about social media. Mm-hmm. I also think about newsletter. I think about community. I think about tried and true media relationships. Like, who can you call to get an interview when it comes time to start getting those inroads? There's a lot of different slices of the platform pie.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a
great way to look at it. It's just not solely defined by social media numbers.
Yeah. It's such a hard, it's really just like one of those things. It's the wall that holds people up. Sometimes the wall that lifts people up and the wall that people break down. It's just like, it's there, you know, it's part of the world now, the platform. Right. So, well, this is what we would normally call the book brag moment, but for you, it's going to be your business brag. What is something you're most proud of when it comes to the Ekis Group?
Oh my gosh. It's hard to distill down into one thing. To be totally honest, I'm really proud of successfully being the next chapter of the agency. The agency has grown and changed with the industry through Lisa's leadership for 40 years. And she and I have been working successfully and intentionally for the past 14. And I'm really proud to carry it forward. And in many ways, I consider us a 40-year-old startup.
Because you're just always learning and growing. Yeah, I love that.
Totally.
That's very good.
I love the work that we do. I love our clients. I love our books. And I love sort of contributing to the space at large in conversations like this.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. Well, that is the portion of how to write a cookbook. Those are the questions we're going to ask you. Of course, everybody can get more and we'll tell everyone where to find it. But now we're going to do your rapid fire baker's dozen. Are you ready for these questions?
I think so. I don't know. What are they?
You're so ready. You got this. Okay. Here we go. Okay. Number one, hot sauce or barbecue sauce?
Hot sauce.
Yeah.
Hashtag spice me Sal on like all my early Instagram posts. Also, really? I was a hot sauce judge at Chili Fest here in Massachusetts. Red wig on the radio, like I don't fuck around. Hot sauce.
Although,
side note, this is not rapid fire, but side note.
I love it. That's great. That's great.
I do also just love sauce in general. So I'm not gonna like shy away from the barbecue or any other sauces.
You love your hot sauce. I'm down for that, but I also think you'd be down for a hot sauce barbecue sauce.
Oh, is that not all the sauces?
I mean, that's what
I combine every time I do a dip situation.
Have you ever had Sawsome sauce?
I don't know.
It's a Wendy's sauce that I wasn't aware of because I haven't eaten at Wendy's in years. But there's a new book called Vegan Fast Food, and I had him on the podcast. I was making stuff from the book, and with the nuggets from Wendy's, there's a Sawsome sauce, and it's a mixture of like ranch and barbecue sauce. It sounds so weird, but it was actually delicious. So I was curious, since you're a saucy gal, if you'd had the sauce.
I don't turn my head. I'm open to all sauce.
You're like, I am an equal opportunity.
I'm an equal sauce opportunist.
Yes. There we go. We're making words tonight. Yeah. I love it. Food on a skewer or a tiny spoon?
Skewer.
Yes. Gimlet or martini?
Oh, extra dirty vodka martini. Hold the vermouth. Extra olives.
Hey, girl. There you go. Favorite SNL sketch that comes to mind first?
Oh, my God. I don't know if you know this about me, but my other life, I do some improv comedy. So
I did a little research.
This is totally a loaded question. pretty much any Molly Shannon superstar armpit smelling situation.
Yeah. Yes, yes. Have you read the book? Her book?
No, but somebody just plugged it to me saying I should listen to it because the way she narrates the book is just fantastic.
I bet. I got it as a summer read and then I read it by, you know, my condo has like a little pool, the tiniest pool. It might as well be a kiddie pool, but I read it by the pool and I later regretted not getting the audiobook because I was of course this is one I want to listen to. What was I thinking? Maybe I'll listen to it.
Did just watch I Love That For You, which is she's in that show.
Yes.
Yeah, funny.
With that's the Showtime one with
I think so.
Yeah. We're on the like QVC sort of show.
Yes, I love it.
I can't wait for season two. Favorite spice to cook with?
Ooh, gut reaction. I was just like, hot stuff. But
she's putting cayenne pepper on everything.
I'm kind of like an equal opportunist spicer, but I do love like a Dukkha seasoning. Okay. I probably sprinkle that on more things than I sprinkle other things.
Okay. All right. That's your winner then. That's your winner.
I have but now it's just like, I have all my spices and they're all like, pick me. So I'm going to have to go home and reconcile that.
That's all right. The most popular one on this question is usually smoked paprika or garlic powder. So you're on the adventurous side. So you already have a answer that's out of those the box than everyone
like, else. Yes, so, for sure. Those all the time.
I love it. If you're ordering spicy food and the server says, how spicy would you like it on a scale of 1 to 5, how spicy are we going?
I guess I would say something sort of sarcastic and a little bit rude. Like if you have a scale, why are you billing it as spicy? Like hit me with what you got.
Okay. So you want a 6.
Although I will say that I
you want to cry
a little bit of my tolerance and I do want to like taste the food.
Yeah.
I didn't give you the tape. One of my earliest food memories is watching Lisa at a Chinese restaurant, squeeze the seeds out of a pepper in one of the dishes with her chopsticks and watching them like fall to her food and eat them so she could like add spice to whatever we were eating. Oh. And I wanted to emulate that. And she was like, you're too young. And ever since then, I was like, what is spicy food and how do I get access to it?
Oh, I used to handle it so well. And as I'm getting older, I don't. It makes me cranky. I used to love jalapenos. And now if I have a raw jalapeno, I get the hiccups right away.
Yep. Yep.
It drives me crazy, like to where I see one and I'm like, I can't have that. And I'm like, oh, age, it's happening. Hi, awesome. Great. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. If you were to make a vegan taco right now, what do you think you would put on it?
Oh my God. You should have prepped me for a taco. honestly, I do a ton of the pressed mushroom tacos.
Oh yeah.
And I'll just keep it simple.
That's good. That's a very good one. Yeah. Something you've learned about veganism, working with vegan authors, maybe.
Oh my gosh. Well, the obvious things like the food is incredible and you can make anything that you would crave as a non-vegan and you wouldn't know the difference. And like nut milks, nut butters, creamy stuff, melty stuff, stretchy things.
So good.
And
I was like, that's good.
I will just like asterisk that question, which is like just continuing to reinforce the fact that like there's this huge divide between vegans and everyone else. And the main thing that I guess live and have learned and loved is that there isn't, you know, at the end of the day, it's great food and it's doing. You can have the junk food version and the impactful mission-driven version and everything in between. And if you know what you're doing in the kitchen, as evidenced by your books and other books, you're good.
I love that. I love that answer. What is something in your morning routine that you can't live without?
I'll go just coffee.
Coffee. I hear you. A show you've binge-watched that you would recommend to somebody?
Well, I did mention I Love That For You. I really enjoyed Dead to Me.
How many seasons now? 3?
4, I think.
4. We're very behind on it. We gotta pick it up.
I think the dialogue in that show is absolutely hilarious. And if it's very like real, like if I found myself in front of a body, I probably would say the most ridiculous things. And like, that's what the dialogue in the show is. And I just appreciate it.
Yeah. And I love
it. And Christina Applegate is.
I was just going to say Christina Applegate. So like, do you ever watch Samantha Who?
No.
It's on Hulu now. I think it had 2 seasons. It was early 2000s. She has amnesia and she was a terrible person before she got amnesia. Oh. She comes back.
And it's Christina Applegate?
Yes. And she's she's remembering how terrible she was and everyone's like scared of her, but she's trying to be a nice person. Melissa McCarthy's in it too. It's like the friend. Yeah, lots of great people in it.
Oh, cool.
Jean Smart plays the mom. Just good. Good all around. Cool. If you weren't a literary agent, what would you have been? What would have been another career path you would have considered?
Well, I was on this career path, actually. Yes. And I was on the path to be a mental health counselor. And I was working in an inpatient locked psychiatric unit at a hospital where I went to college, and I loved the work. And it was truly just like remarkable. And at the time I was in my early 20s, and I'm an empathetic agent. I'm an even more empathetic psychiatric technician. And I just ended up walking around crying. And I was like,
oh,
you know what? This may not be the role for me. But I was trained in active listening, negotiation, and crisis counseling, which are all three very transferable skills to working with cookbook authors.
Very, very much so. That's great. That's just transfers practically directly. That's great. Fantastic. Yeah,
if you don't like your book cover, right. I got you. Yeah.
I can clear an hour for that conversation. That's right. That's fine, right? Favorite shape of pasta?
My gut reaction was any.
Yeah, I mean, it's pasta, yeah. Right?
I do love when a pea gets in the little shell, though.
Oh, how cute and specific. Yeah, delicious. I love it. What's a place you'd like to visit on your dream list?
Oaxaca.
Amazing. And I added this question when I saw the books behind you, and we had a little back and forth about how many books we have. Estimate, this is your last question. How many cookbooks do you think you have in your home?
In my home, I will say probably only like 100 or 150.
Okay. All right.
In my world,
yeah,
I can confirm that it is, that the actual count is over like 5,500 in my world.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. You did it. That's your rapid fire.
Thank you so much.
Yes.
So
well done. Applause. You survived. Well, Sally, please tell everyone where they can find your course, How to Write a Cookbook.
Yeah, thank you. You can find it through our social at Sally Eckes and at Eckes Group, and on Podia, which is more easily linked from our website at eckesgroup.com. And I'm an overly accessible agent that loves to share industry knowledge and connect. If you're not sure about taking the course or you just want to connect in general, feel free to also join my Facebook community, also aptly named How to Be a Cookbook Author. And it's a place where I share industry information, resources about the course, and other intensives that we do, but also for people to connect with one another.
That's great. And I will get all the information from you and put it down in the show notes as well. So we'll have that everyone to click on. Everything will be easily clickable for everyone, accessible. And of course, you can learn more about Sally and all that the Eckes Group has to offer, including some of the wonderful titles they have had a hand bringing into the world at eckesgroup.com. Sally, I appreciate you so much. Thank you for being here and shedding some light on the world of cookbook publishing. I'm so grateful. Thank you for being a guest.
Justin, thank you so much for having me. It's always a pleasure to chat with you. I just absolutely love it.
Thank you so much for tuning in. Don't forget, you can get so much more from Sally with her online How to Write a Cookbook course. The link is in the show descriptions, and you can use the code PRO150 for $150 off.
And there are still a few slots available for her nonfiction pitch and publishing intensive. It's an intensive, interactive 4-hour online group workshop. The course is March 21st, 2023, and is being offered at a discounted rate. And you can sign up at the link in the other link in the show description.
Yes, both links are down there, along with a bunch of other links of things that we discussed too. So lots of great things. Yeah, so many great things to check out that Sally mentioned. And you can follow us and this podcast and everything related to it at veganroadie.com and also on Instagram at @TheVeganRoadie.
Yes, and please don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe everywhere you listen to podcasts. It really does help us out.
Yeah, it does. And listen, thanks for tuning in today. We will see you next week. Until then, keep on cooking, and remember, it's nice to be nice. This has been a Muzzy Cat production.